Should we screen blood donations for Zika virus?
Crowdfunding and stem cell therapy.
Should MRI be used when the prostate needs a biopsy?
And prostate cancer screening.
That's what we're talking about this week on PodMed Double T, your weekly look at the medical headlines from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso. Posted on May 11th, 2018, I'm Elizabeth Tracy, a medical journalist at Johns Hopkins.
And I'm Rick Lang, president of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center El Paso and dean of the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine.
Rick, let's turn right to the New England Journal of Medicine, the study that I served up as Should We Be Screening Blood Donations for Zika Virus? So as we know, there was a worldwide furor, really, when Zika emerged as an infection. Lots of really pretty tragic consequences as a result of that, especially during pregnancy. So they instituted a blood screening program for testing for the virus. In this study, they looked at over 4 million blood donations. They pulled a bunch of those things together, tried to find out, well, all right, where are the reactive ones in here? Are we actually finding any of these? They found 160 that were initially reactive and 9 that were confirmed positive. In total, and this is the thing that I find absolutely startling, they found that in order to prevent one potential case of Zika virus transmission via blood transfusion, it would be a cost of about $1 million. That's a lot of money in order to potentially prevent one single case of infection.
So Elizabeth, if I read that study right, if they screened over 4 million individuals and found 9 with infection, that means it's about 1 per 500,000 or 1 per 500,000 in the United States. Now, in the areas that had endemic infections, that is in French Polynesia and also in certain parts of South America, during active infection, routine blood donations were infected about 1% to 2% of the time. In the United States, it's much less. And as you allude to, it's very expensive. And in fact, a screen for an entire year would cost the American Red Cross an extra $137 million. It tells me that we all want safe blood products, there's no question about it. But can we be smarter about this? Well, if you dig down a little bit more into this study, the individuals that were infected here were primarily those that received the infection outside the U.S. and traveled into the U.S. and gave blood. If you wait for 180 days after you've been to those areas, even if you were infected, it clears. One of the things we can do is say, if you've traveled to one of these endemic areas, you can't donate. The second is, instead of testing the samples individually, you can pool some of the samples. So there are ways we can use this data to become more effective in screening for Zika virus.
And I think this is especially important because, of course, we're always seeing new emerging infectious diseases that can be transmitted via the blood.
The other issue is, if you look at last year, there were 200 infections in the United States. This year, only 2. So you could also change your screening or when you do it or how you do it based upon whether you're in an epidemic era or not.
Speaking of screening then, let's turn to the Journal of the American Medical Association. Should men undergo PSA screening for prostate cancer?
What they did was they looked at over 63 studies and 104 publications that included almost 2 million men. Based upon that, the recommendation was for men over the age of 70, there's no evidence that screening for prostate cancer actually lowers prostate cancer mortality. What it does is it detects a lot of cancer that otherwise wouldn't have been clinically relevant, and men get treated for it, and it subjects them to the harm. For example, if a man has a radical prostatectomy, his risk of having urinary incontinence is 20%, and of having erectile dysfunction is 67 to 70%. And between the ages of 55 to 69, the USPSTF recommends individual testing should be done only after there's been a discussion of the potential benefits and harms of screening. If you screen 1,000 men over a 13-year period, you'll prevent 1.3 prostate cancer-related deaths. However, during that time, you will detect about 40 cases of prostate cancer that otherwise would have been clinically irrelevant and subject the men to the harms that I mentioned. So these are the kind of discussions that one has to have. Now, there are two groups in which prostate cancer screening should be done. Men that have first-degree relatives that have a history of prostate cancer or other adenocarcinomas in the GI tract or in the lung, or women in the ovaries. And then it appears that African-American men are about twice as likely to die of prostate cancer than non-African-American men. So those groups perhaps should have prostate cancer screening in the ages of 55 to 69, but not over the age of 70.
I have to conclude that all of this points to the clear need for something that is a good deal more predictive of prostate cancer rather than PSA.
I totally agree. Probably what should be done is routine monitoring, not just a single PSA that's elevated, because there are a lot of things besides prostate cancer that do that, but an appropriate strategy where you're following it over a long period of time to see what that PSA is doing. And then having better tests to determine whether prostate cancer is there or not. And that leads to our next study, one that you're going to talk about in the New England Journal of Medicine.
It sure does. This is a look at the utility of MRI for targeted biopsy of the prostate. In general, men undergo ultrasonography, and that frequently is used to guide the prostate biopsy when a prostate biopsy is indicated. And in this study, they took a look at 500 men who underwent randomization to either the MRI biopsy group or not. The MRI was able to actually take some of those men out of the group because it suggested that, guess what? We don't really think you have prostate cancer, so you don't even need to have a biopsy. The men who did have the biopsy via MRI, it was a good deal more predictive, and there's a lot of other advantages to it. In total, then, this study suggests to me that MRI-guided biopsy is the way to go and ought to be the standard of care for men who are going to undergo a biopsy of their prostate gland when prostate cancer is highly suspected.
And currently, Elizabeth, if your PSA is elevated, if it's over 4, as you suggest, men oftentimes have a sonogram, and that directs the biopsy. Now, the biopsy, there are 6 to 12 pieces of biopsy tissue taken just indiscriminately around the prostate. What that means is you're going to detect clinically low-grade cancer in some men who otherwise it really wouldn't be relevant. What MRI does, as you mentioned, it tells you if there is an abnormality, and in those in which there is an abnormality, they take only 3 pieces of tissue. They're more likely to detect a higher grade cancer and less likely to have false positives. So this suggests it should be the standard of care in most men with an elevated PSA.
Let's talk about availability of this technique nationwide.
In large urban settings, it's certainly available. It's standard MRI equipment. It just requires a special coil to look at the prostate because it's a small gland, but it's routinely available.
Okay, let's turn to our final one. This is a research letter in the Journal of the American Medical Association taking a look at something that's very timely, much in the news. Hey, what about these stem cell clinics, their purported benefits, and an interesting aspect to that?
Elizabeth, you found this particular study, and I appreciate you bringing it to my attention. The long and the short is that these crowdfunding campaigns for stem cell therapy are helping to spread inaccurate information. Stem cell therapy, there are over 351 different U.S.-based companies offering stem cell therapy, everything from curing someone's poor vision to treating their arthritis. And unfortunately, they're unproven therapies. But there's direct-to-consumer marketing of these therapies. Because they're unproven, the insurance companies don't pay for them. That means the individual pays for them and has to raise money. And one of the ways to do that is with crowdfunding. So what these investigators did was they looked over about a 5-month period at the two most popular crowdfunding platforms, that is GoFundMe or YouCaring, and they asked a simple question. How many individuals were soliciting funds for stem cell therapy? They found 408 different campaigns requesting over $7.5 million. People contributed $1.5 million from about 13,000 different donors. 75% of the time, the individuals presented the stem cell therapy as it was definitely proven and going to be helpful or likely to be helpful. And in very few of the times did they ever say it wasn't going to be beneficial. And 36 of them, they represented there's going to be no risk at all involved with it. And we know that's not the case. So this is an interesting study in that it shows that the crowdfunding, which was accessed by over 111,000 people that looked at the advertisements, conflated the results, and we know this is unproven therapy.
And this is something that just sends me over the deep end because it's just so frankly manipulative. It really trades on people's desperation with regard to their particular health conditions, and I think speaks loudly for the need for federal regulation.
Absolutely. The FDA has not entered into this field previously, but is now in their crosshairs because it's caused specific harm. There are instances where stem cell therapy have been injected into people's eyes and they've lost their vision completely. Again, what I want our listeners to know is that these U.S.-based stem cell therapy centers, this direct-to-consumer marketing, is for therapy that is unproven at this time.
And per that, in the Journal of Physiology this week, a study that we are not actually talking about in greater detail, but really points to the kinds of studies that need to be done in order to demonstrate the efficacy of this. This was a study taking a look at stem cell utility after heart attack and whether it was able to repair the heart. This is the kind of thing that has to be done, closely scrutinized and peer-reviewed.
I totally agree.
Okay. On that note, I'm going to talk about the USPSTF's recommendations regarding prostate cancer screening on the blog this week. That's a look at this week's medical headlines from Texas Tech. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang. Y'all listen up and make healthy choices.